science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
I've really missed that. All right, let's get straight into it.
Indeed.
The sun. Seems people were trying to get closer to the sun.
Absolutely.
Why?
Excuse me.
Why?
To study it. Why do we do
study
anything?
It.
That's,
okay.
That's science for you. But on Saturday, they are going to launch a probe to the sun. Of course, they're doing it at night.
I get that. That's funny. There's a great
such a dad joke.
I know. Oh God, I get accused of that all the time. Anyway,
all right.
There is a thing called the Parker Solar Probe that they are sending to the sun on Saturday, and this is named after an American physicist by the name of Eugene Parker, who first came up with the idea of a thing called the solar wind and the solar corona. And so what is a solar corona, you may ask?
That's where the sun is, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of what surrounds the sun.
Yeah.
So if you've ever been lucky enough to see a solar eclipse, which I haven't, so when the moon goes right
in front of the sun,
you see all that stuff around the outside of it, mm-hmm. and that's your solar corona.
Hmm.
And as part of that is a thing called the solar wind, and this is a whole heap of sort of charged particles that come out and go in all directions, and sometimes they can cause trouble with us on Earth. If we have big solar storms, then they can sort of knock out telecommunications and things. They lead to aurora borealis, so that's sort of charged particles in the atmosphere, etc., etc. And so not really a hell of a lot is known, or not as much as people would like, is known about the solar corona. So this is why they're sending a spacecraft there.
And it's not known because you can't really get there easily.
Difficult to get to, yes, yes. So
are they doing to be able to get there?
Well, they had to obviously build a... oh, sorry, I've got the lurgy, folks. They had to build a spacecraft that was sort of impervious to heat. Because the temperature in the solar corona is about 1,000,000 degrees.
How do you come up with material that actually...
And how do you test it?
Well, that's the thing. 1,000,000 degrees, but it's all sort of radiated very, very sort of in all directions. So the actual temperature is not so bad. So the temperatures that the spacecraft's got to withstand, around about 1,350 degrees Celsius.
Oh, yeah, not
Celsius.
As bad.
No.
Still feeling hot.
But the beauty of this is that they had to go to a place in France to test out all of this stuff to look at its heat resistance. And what they did, the first thing is that they need to look at heat resistance in vacuum, because in space there's nothing there, so they're in a vacuum, okay?
Yep.
If you try and do this stuff on Earth in a normal sort of setup, as soon as you start heating things up, they start burning because they react with oxygen in the air. Now, in space there's no oxygen, so things are going to be a lot more resilient in space.
Mm-hmm.
And so they needed access to a place where they could do all their experiments under vacuum, and also could get the very high temperatures needed to do this. And it's not as easy as it sounds, apparently. But there's this place in France called Odéo.
I would say Odéo, but that's my terrible pronunciation of Catalan.
So this is down in the Pyrenees, down near the Spanish border.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have 63 mirrors on mountains around here, and they focus onto an enormous concave mirror, which is on the side of an 8-story building.
Wow.
Which is massive.
Yeah.
And that focuses the rays in there, and then that 8-story building mirror focuses the light into about 80-centimeter wide light beam, which has a temperature around about 3,000 degrees
wow.
Celsius.
So it's like concentrated.
Yes, yeah, it's concentrated sunlight.
Why did they make that in the first place?
Okay. Precisely.
Studying?
Just studying high
literally
temperatures.
Literally for so, this.
Yeah, yeah. What they do in parts of the world is actually they use this as a method for producing electricity. They actually melt sodium chloride, then that can turn into steam. So they then put it into water, it turns into steam, and steam drives turbines. So. But this thing, apparently, you can swing a 4x2 through it and it'll just disintegrate.
What happens if you, what if you
don't? You don't want to get in the way of it, yeah.
What the heck?
So they got all the spacecraft components and they were sort of putting them in this. And so they found the best thing for the heat shield was just plain old pure carbon.
Huh.
And so they're covering the spacecraft with this heat shield, which can, on one side of it, it's going to be around about 1300 degrees C. And in the sort of engine room, I guess, of the spacecraft, it's around about 30 degrees Celsius. So
wow.
Quite astonishing.
Yeah.
And then also, the spacecraft's going to be travelling about 170 kilometres a second towards the sun.
Pretty fast.
Now, if there's any minute pieces of dust there, that's going to cause potential havoc as well. And especially considering one of their telescopes is facing straight forward towards the sun, so in the direction of travel. So you've got, you know, the lens on your telescope had to be really, really, really...
resistant.
Very resistant to those sorts of impacts that can occur. And so they tested this out in a wind tunnel and everything, and they found the best way or the best material for making this lens and everything. And there's way more that goes into making a spacecraft than you think. I want to know how long this took them from start to finish. That's a really good question. I wish I could answer that. But yeah, it'd be years and years, I would say. These things are obviously planned years in advance. And so ultimately what they're hoping to do is to go to around about a distance of 6 million kilometres from the sun. And
that sounds like a long way,
but that's at 10 times closer than Mercury's orbit. So that's the closest planet to the sun. So they're going 10 times closer than that. They're actually going to be in the solar corona.
Do they have any thoughts on what they might find?
Oh, we scientists never do that.
Okay.
You never try and presuppose your results. Yeah, because if they knew, then what's the point in doing the experiment?
But what, are they going to equip themselves with all sorts of, you know, monitoring?
Yeah. So they're going to be measuring all the magnetic fields and everything and all of these charged particles and stuff and just, you know, finding out more about the environment of the sun, which is absolutely, you know, absolutely astonishing stuff.
So, well, how long until we find out? How long until they're back?
They reckon they're going to start getting results in about 6 months after takeoff, but the closest approach is going to be 2024.
Okay, it's a way away.
It's a wee way away, but that's the same thing with, you know, whenever they send up... spacecraft, because they take forever to get to... Yeah.
Okay, we could talk about this for a long time. So let's... moving on to full stops and, well, a murder charge.
Yes.
Because somebody sent a text.
Indeed. So this was in the Herald the other day. Readers or listeners may have seen it. And it's not this story that's the interesting bit, but actually it was a link within the story. But the story itself was... A guy in Britain murdered a woman, and then after he'd murdered her, he sent some text messages on her cell phone, pretending to be her, obviously. And he got caught by a forensic linguist. Now, I didn't know that was a thing.
Once met a cryptological linguist on a plane. And I thought that sounded very spy-like.
It does, yes.
I'm going to keep talking to you. Anyway, sorry. Back to the story.
No, that's good.
It's cool. But so would they be the same people that do, like, letter analysis?
Yes,
and stuff like that?
I would imagine so, yeah. So, you know, looking at things like frequency of use of particular words or letters or whatever. But the thing that caught this guy out, and excuse me, folks.
Do you want some water?
I'll live. The thing that caught this guy out was that he put two spaces after punctuation.
And no space after a comma.
After a comma, yes. And this is not this was not her style of texting. And
it is glaringly obvious.
Well, it's glaringly... it is, I agree, but it's glaringly obvious in hindsight.
Right.
Isn't it? Because who thinks about
the
way that they...
I don't like it. I don't like the way it looks. If I don't have a space after a comma.
Oh, no, I agree. You've got to have a space after a comma. That's a no-brainer.
But I see the full stop is a different... Because sort of may not notice. Mm. I do notice that too. This is personally... I don't like it, so I don't do it.
But and not everyone's so anal.
Also, if you're running out of time and you've got to get out of a house where you've just murdered somebody...
Indeed, yes. You wouldn't have taken... Yeah, but...
Why text in the first place?
Trying to cover his steps and everything. But there's a scientific bent to all of this because within that story there was a link which I clicked, and it transpires that there are people who actually do research on this sort of stuff, on text language and things. And so one of the findings in a couple of recent papers by a particular group in the States is that if you put a full stop at the end of your texts, you are judged insincere, apparently.
Yeah, I didn't know about the insincere thing. For me, personally, when I send a text and I put a full stop, it sounds a bit harsh.
Yeah.
It sounds like
you think
about
that. I've thought about this in my text, especially if it's just a one word or if it's one sentence.
Yes, yep.
And you put a full stop, it's like, Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
You don't know this is the thing. And so sometimes I will not put a full stop just to show that I am open to a continued conversation and I'm not shutting you down.
Exactly.
That's really interesting because my partner, she would agree with you guys. because whenever I would text her back an answer to a question with a one word thing and put a full stop, she'd think I was really
having
it. Yes, yep. Exactly. Why are you angry? I'm not angry. I'm just being punctuationally correct, for God's sake. But it transpires that people have done studies on this. So a bunch of undergrads at Binghamton University in the States were participants in this trial. It amazed me. They voluntarily participated in return for extra credit, for God's sake. Bloody hell.
That's one way to
tell. And they were asked to judge, you know, the feeling, I guess, or the tone of text messages that both included and didn't include full stops at the end of the sentence. And it was pretty much unanimous that they thought that you were really being abrupt if you put a full stop after a one-word answer. And even just having a full stop at the end of a sentence, my God, it's proper punctuation, people. There's no excuse.
But if you send a text that has just the letter K and a full stop, that is an ouch. That is an ouch text.
I would never send a text with the letter K. I'm assuming that's short for OK.
It is. But it's also a shutdown.
Why don't you just type the O? What? I mean, come on.
I wanted to point out, though, because obviously this is a thing about texting. This one of the findings that they had in that research was that the difference in sincerity sincerity and insincerity was not found in handwritten
notes.
Yes,
indeed. Yes.
So what's the difference?
Well, apparently we're meant to be punctuationally correct when we're handwriting, but not when we're texting.
Is this like a digital phenomenon now that, we have
Are we just being lazy?
I reckon that's what it is, though. Isn't it like some sort of rules that we've internalised with sending texts? Like, it's like those, I don't know, everyone knows that if you put a full stop, then it's not
good.
Yeah,
but I didn't.
I didn't
until I was told.
Maybe it's
for
millennials or something, like people born in
the generational thing where...
Yeah, very probably.
Because I have certainly gone through phases in my text language where I've written without vowels.
No,
yes,
Lillian.
I did that, and now I don't do that.
Should I call you Lillian?
But that's the thing, right? You shorten your text because it's sort of cooler, and then I don't like that. Yeah. I don't do that. I can't write unless it's a joke. I'll put SRS for serious or something.
SRS. Okay. But you shorten your text because it was only 160 characters, and
it cost
you more. That's the reason why text language evolved. But now that's not an excuse anymore.
But there's another thing that I think was in the study, or maybe I'm making this up, is also like sending, because I think I read it, but it's like sending multiple short texts as well.
Oh, that meant something.
Yeah, that meant that you were kind of like too desperate in a way.
Yes,
like, that's
right.
Look,
I do
desperate.
That. But it's like, just because you send and then you think of something else and then you send that and then...
But it also, I think, feels maybe a little bit insistent, like you really have a message that you
reply
need to convey.
To me now.
Like,
reply to me
just
now.
Like, look, I'm sending multiple
see this
texts.
I've sent another one so that
The words passive aggressive were used in that particular study, I think. Yeah.
But it's interesting for punctuation because I went through a phase of putting a lot of exclamation marks after words. And then realizing that doing that made me sound a little bit too... No, I think it was maybe too enthusiastic, thank you with an exclamation mark, and it was kind of just like...
And also, see you later!
Yay! And it's like really enthusiastic, but then if I put a full stop, it felt abrupt, and I was kind of like, how do I get out of this thing? I don't know what to do.
This is difficult.
So, maybe if we just all talked to each other. Maybe.
What?!
Yeah, I know. Crazy as it may sound, huh?
I like that. Let's do that. We do need to move on, though.
We do. Okay. We've got 2 minutes left.
Yeah. No, 2 minutes left. But helium.
Yeah, this is a very brief one.
What's up with
anyway? Oh, very good. I saw what you did there. Well, I'll get through this. 150th anniversary of helium this year.
Well, of the discovery, obviously,
of the identification, not the discovery.
There was no helium before.
There was helium before it was discovered, and it was discovered by a Frenchman, a French astronomer.
Yeah, really good at this.
And he went halfway around the world to view a solar eclipse. So we're just talking about solar eclipses before, with a new piece of equipment called a spectroscope. And this was essentially sort of a glorified prism. You know the way that when you shoot white light through a prism, it splits into a rainbow?
Yeah, sure.
Similar sort of thing. And so he wanted to see what the sun's light looked like during the middle of the solar eclipse, which was in Madras. And he found the evidence for this new element that hadn't been known before. And so they called this new element helium, after the Greek for helios, meaning sun. Yeah. And it wasn't isolated until about sort of 30-odd years later, 1895, by a guy, William Ramsay, who found it from heating up a sample of uranium. And he identified the same stuff, and he said, oh, this is a new element. And that was when it was first actually isolated. But it's 150 years since the 1868 solar eclipse. And helium, obviously listeners would probably be most familiar with helium in terms of party balloons.
Yeah.
Very probably.
Yes.
So we know it's lighter than air. So the trouble with helium is it is lighter than air, and so therefore it all goes up.
And this is what you mean about we're running out of helium.
And we are running out of helium, yes, yes. Because all of the helium on Earth, as soon as it gets into the atmosphere, it's just going to go up because it's not heavy enough to be held by gravity.
Wow.
And so it goes out into outer space.
What happens when we run out?
Very good question. We won't have any MRI machines.
What?
I know. And we won't have any more helium balloons.
I feel like there's one significantly more important issue
okay.
there.
Helium is really, really important because liquid helium is the coldest liquid that you can get. And that goes down to negative 269 degrees Celsius. That's 4 degrees above absolute zero, which is the coldest that you can get. And it is used to cool down the magnets that magnetic resonance imaging machines need to operate, and they have to work at very, very, very low temperatures. And once we're out of helium, then that's going to be a problem. We're going to have to find a new source of cooling things down somehow.
Yeah.
So luckily, they've just found a big new deposit in Tanzania in the last few years. And obviously, hopefully, helium has to be found underground. Otherwise, if it was just sort of, you know, in the atmosphere, it pops out. So they've found a big deposit of helium under the ground in Tanzania. And so they're looking at starting to mine that, which should keep us good for the next few years or so. But, you know, it is a dwindling resource and it's something that we really do need. It's very, very important. And
but we can't recreate it. So we're bound to run out of it?
Well, it comes primarily as a result of radioactive decay. So radioactivity. So that's why he found it with
Right.
What about that Chernobyl area? Like, wouldn't we find any?
No, because in the grand scheme of things, there's probably not too much radioactivity there. That would really allow you to do that. But so big deposits of uranium, things like that, you're going to find helium around that. But we are going to have to look at recycling helium, because now all of the helium that we use just sort of boils off into the atmosphere. We've got a machine at AUT. Auckland here have got 6 machines that use liquid helium. So every 6 or so months, you've got to ship it over from Australia and fill it up and everything. And it costs an arm and a leg, but it keeps our machines cool. So
this is actually quite sad.
Yeah, I know. So helium balloons, people, think about that.
Yeah.
You can fill them up with hydrogen, but it is a little bit dangerous. Remember the Hindenburg.
Can't you just blow it with your own
breath? You can, as long as it's really, really hot breath, otherwise it's not going to rise. So.
All right. We're leaving it there. We've got a couple of texts, though, and I think listeners may have noticed that we don't have Dara in studio with us, our fellow producer.
Don't.
I've got a text in from Dara with a smiley face, so I feel like that might be her listening. She says, don't you think we're looking too much into adding full stops at the end? We've always been taught to add full stops at the end of a sentence, so why not in text?
Hear, hear. I agree.
Also, somebody though asking, was the study completed in the smartphone predictive text era or earlier?
No, this was 2016-2018. So, you know, a couple of taps on the bloody, you know, thing at the bottom and that's a full stop. It's not difficult, people.
Okay.
Be correct.
Thank you, Alan. Okay. We'll talk to you next week.
See you.
That was Dear Science.